The third attempt on Kapoor's life was when Slippery the Midget got sick. Slippery's routine was to slip on a bullet-shaped helmet and slide down a cannon. They'd open up the roof of the big top and shoot Slippery out into space. The class act was for Slippery to reach the zenith and then return back down, hitting the same open hole and landing on a cushion. Then he'd leap to his feet and bow to the thundering applause. Well, that night, when Slippery couldn't perform, Kapoor was asked to fill in.
Fitting in wasn't easy. I had to squeeze myself down inside that cannon barrel.
We took all precautions possible.
Your attention, please. Slippery, the human BB, will not be shot out of a cannon tonight. Wait. But we have a special treat. Someone who has never been shot out of anything in his life. Someone who we all know and love. That madcap mirthmaster, known for his fabulous foolishness and riotous, rip-tickling, side-splitting tomfoolery. That gifted gangster who engages in heartfelt hilarity with a maximum of merry mischief and mighty mirth. That incredible Rodent Kapoor!
Rodent!
Now quiet! This is an extremely dangerous stunt he will attempt. No one other than Slippery the Human BB has ever been shot out of a cannon, upward to the stars, and returned alive.
Huh?
And now, as you can see, the brave rodent has wedged his little rat-like body, tail and all, into the menacing mouth of the mighty cannon. Oh, what nerve-shattering nonchalance. He will be fired up and out of the big top, over the moon, and then hopefully come back again.
Over the moon?
Quiet now, please! This death-defying rodential cannonball must focus his tiny rat-like mind to prepare for his astral achievement, sailing through space in a volley virtuosity, challenging the grip of gravity in an anticipated, spectacular, somersaulting salvos of stratospheric splendor.
Does he mean me?
Shush! Quiet, please. Quiet. And now, the cannon master strikes his match. He lights the fuse. It's burning. Burning down.
Meanwhile, down inside the cannon barrel, Kapoor had finally squeezed himself to the base of the barrel where he discovered something sharp, pointed, and cold.
What is this thing I'm sitting on? It feels like a cannon shell.
Down and down burns the fuse. Any moment now, we'll hear a gigantic explosion as... Wait! The cannon barrel has suddenly descended. It's now pointing at the impenetrable steel wall of death. Something is wrong. Quick, someone, put out that fuse. What? It's too late? Oh, no, I can't look. What a splat you make against that shiny wall.
It was going to be Spatulaville for Kapoor. He'd hit that wall like a speeding bullet. But just as the cannon fired, it raised ever so slightly. And Kapoor, barely clearing the steel wall, was shot through the side of the big top and went sailing way the heck out into the desert, where he landed head first in a sand dune.
Oh, okay. There's one thing I didn't tell you, the one thing in my favor, nannery. They had stripped me of weapons, but what they didn't find were my nanomites stored in two of my molars. Once I pried the caps off my teeth and unscrewed the capsules inside, all I had to do was set them loose. They're microscopic. There's millions of these nanomites. They're like termites. They'll destroy your house in an hour and then reconstruct something else out of the debris. But that's the thing about nanomites. You don't know what they're going to do, unless you can point them in a direction and let them at it. One capsule was weaponry. The nanos were programmed to build what they could out of the material at hand, and the other was conveyance, building a vehicle, a means of transportation. The question was, how to direct them? I remembered the brick I dropped on one of the bio balls. I found the brick, tied the capsule to it, and waited on the balcony. When the ball came rolling by, the brick slipped, down it went, bang, off the ball, scattering nanomites all over it. They wouldn't eat the thing, they wouldn't attack a living creature, but they did know who was the foe. The other capsule I carried to the edge of the desert. I poured them out onto the hot sand, God knows what they thought of that, and then I went back to my hammock and took a nap. I was awakened a couple hours later when a building collapsed. That was a good sign. I went back to sleep. About an hour after that, another one went. Another nap, another hour, and... Ooh, they certainly were busy little nanos. I dozed off for a while. And then was awakened by a noise. I sat up, looked around. My translator was missing. Huh. I didn't notice those cracks before. There were creaks and groans, or maybe it was me groaning. Oh, no. I rolled out of my hammock and started for the steps, but they collapsed. I figured I'd better leap off the balcony, but that went next. Then the wall went. Down below, the bio balls were rolling around, going crazy. It was tempting to use one of them for a cushion, but nah, the bounce might send me back into the building. Oh well, it was only the second floor, so I jumped. And just as my feet left the floor, the building went. I dusted myself off and looked around. Well, the nanomites hadn't totally destroyed the town, at least. Not yet. I noticed that the pile of rusted machinery had vanished. I don't know who got that, whether it was the weaponry mites or the vehicle mites. In case you're wondering, these nanomites do have a designated lifespan. They'll run amok for about 48 hours and then, poo, that's it, they're pooped. The destruction had stopped. The construction had begun. I couldn't tell if it was a weapon or a vehicle being built. It was a fine wire mesh. Maybe they were weaving an anti-gravity flying carpet. Yeah, right. Dream on, Ruby. On the other side of town, the B-team were building a flimsy, gauzy thing. Looked like something I could wear, except kept getting bigger. Well, the bio-balls weren't stupid. They didn't like what was going on, and they started bouncing off whatever was being built. That slowed the nanomites down. In fact, they stopped altogether. Work ceased. And since nothing was completed, there wasn't a thing I could use.
By morning, they'd located the dune where Kapoor had landed and disappeared into the soft sand. They shoveled about until finally...
Ow! That sounds like his helmet. Try it again.
Ow!
Is that you, Kapoor? Right.
Ow!
There's his tail. Okay, out you come.
Ow!
That was a nice trajectory, Kapoor. Mouthful of sand all over my face. Hey.
The nanomites started in again. It took a while for me to realize what they were doing. Reinforcing. When the balls attacked, the nano accessed their strength and revised their estimates. The attack was the ball's undoing. It was a net the Nanos had built. Or some of them. The others had constructed towers. And when the two balls got together and once again were bouncing on the net, up they went, snared by the net, suspended in the air. There was no rolling out of that one. Now, what the vehicle gang had put together was absolutely ingenious. It was a butterfly. It had wings 2 stories high. The wings were spun out of a glassy substance, spun out of sand for all I know. It looked like a breath would send it tumbling. It was so wispy and delicate, there was no way to get me off the ground. But it was pretty. There was an open cockpit with a set of pedals. Oh well, pedaling was better than walking on hot sand. Even though the wings resembled a butterfly, they were puffy wings. The Nanos figured that the heat trapped inside would lighten the load. But the load was me. And that was the problem. How could a Nano know my weight? Well, after having seen how they altered their design when the balls attacked their net, I figured if I climbed into the cockpit, sat down, worked the pedals, and then stepped out... Yeah, sure enough. Work stopped. They were recalculating my weight. Or so I thought. But as time ticked away, I realized their 48 hours were up. They had stopped permanently.
Now, here are some scenes from next week as Ruby Six continues.
Oh no! The tongue! The black tongue of death has our angel of light in its grip! Will she be able to escape the grinding teeth, the great chopping jaws of impending doom? Will she be able...
Angel screamed. She was caught in the great jaws that smashed down on her slim, blithe, plastic Barbie body, mashing into a pathetic pulp as it chomped on her over and over and over and chomp, chomp, chomp.
Andor ran to the control panel and cut the power as the jaws opened wide for its final coup de crunch. It was Kapoor who reached her first, scampering up the guy wires to the brooding, steaming Angel of Doom high above the stunned crowd of Lubus.
Oh, Angel, you're so... Oh.
I know. I'm dying, Rodan.
No, androids don't die.
But we do.
Andor will fix you. He can fix anything, even something that's been so squashed and mangled and mutilated.
I tried to protect you, Rodan.
Me? From what?
From Cream Puff.
Oh, yeah, Cream Puff the clown.
The first time I dropped a coin.
It was you who dropped the shiny coin from the top of the big top, and when I bent down to pick it up, an exploding custard pie passed over instead of taking my head off?
It was me, Rodan.
And it was you who snatched my bulbous nose and threw it away just before it was set to explode and take my head off again?
It was me.
And it was you who adjusted the cannon so I didn't get splotted against the steel wall, but instead was fired to the side of the big top and way across the desert where I landed headfirst into a dune?
It was me.
Are you my guardian angel?
I was.
But why?
Because it should have been you and me, Rodette.
You and me? Doing what?
Being together, holding hands, making love.
Making... Why didn't you tell me?
Because I knew if I showed my affection, Cream Puff would try and kill you.
But Cream Puff was trying to kill me!
You are a born clown. He was jealous. You got the laughs, he got the guffaws. And he knew I loved you.
But Andor, he loves you.
I know, but I've always been attracted to a man of character.
I'm not a man. I'm a little rat.
That's what gives you character.
Oh, I never thought of that.